Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our Monday edition brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. So as I mentioned earlier, we're getting closer to springtime. That means spring cleaning when it comes to your insurance policy, because you want to make sure when life happens, you are covered. So that's why the great team at Purdy Insurance can put together the policy that'll fit your needs and your budget. And they deal with the best products, the ones that are most reputable, the ones that you can definitely count on and trust. And you can definitely count and trust the people at Purdy Insurance. So stop by, pay them a visit, Market Street in Sunbury, or go to purdyinsurance.com. And also, we mentioned earlier, we've got the date for this year's Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. It'll be Wednesday, May the 8th at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCAs in Sunbury and in Milton. And we'll give you more information as we get closer when it's time to book your foursome for a morning run on the course or a great afternoon on the course with lunch and dinner too, and your chance to win great prizes. Of course, all to benefit the wise in Sunbury and Milton, and an event we look forward to each and every year. So like we always do, we kick off hour number two with our play-by-play call of the day. This happened in college basketball yesterday, a three-quarter court shot at the half between St. John's and Villanova.
No good as the shot clock expires. One shot, three-quarter court shot. Teed by Simon.
Oh!
Justin Simon!
Wow!
With the three-quarter court shot!
St. John's radio. At that point, the St. John's was down, but they were able to come back and upset Villanova. Your play-by-play call of the day. We invite you to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. We're on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Search Steve Jones Show, hit subscribe. Shows will drop to your smartphone and tablet, so you can listen to them anytime, anywhere. And also, you have access to 3 months of shows. They're always archived at stevejonesshow.com. So we do have a little Penn State football to share with you real quick. And before we get to Ben Jones from statecollege.com, actually, we found this on statecollege.com, in regards to Southern Columbia's Julian Fleming. Number one high school wide receiver prospect in the country, class of 2022. Well, Saturday night, he was given the Mr. Pennsylvania Football Award. And minutes before, Fleming was on the stage. They were listening to a 25-minute, 10-second keynote address from James Franklin. Fleming currently a junior at Southern Columbia. And of course, we all know, not too far from Knoebels. He is currently the fifth-ranked high school football player in the nation, number one-ranked prep footballer in Pennsylvania, and the nation's number one-rated wide receiver for the class of 2020. So he currently has it narrowed down to six schools: Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Oregon, and Penn State. So we'll find out where he's going. Maybe we'll find out in December. Maybe we'll find out sooner than that. Of course, December is the first part of the National Letter of Intent Day, now split up in two parts, right before Christmas time, and of course, the first Wednesday in February. So I wanted to give you some news on that. Congratulations to Southern Columbia's Julian Fleming, Mr. Pennsylvania Football, announced over the weekend down in Harrisburg. All right, so over the weekend as well, Penn State basketball on the road. Losing to Purdue, and they'll be taking on Nebraska tomorrow night in the Jordan Center. And by the way, we'll hear from a Nebraska basketball beat writer in the next half hour. But now we'll check in with Steve as he talks to Penn State, not only football, but basketball writer too, Ben Jones from statecollege.com.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me.
101 conference games so far this season in the Big Ten. 56% of them have been decided by 10 points or less. 15 of them have gone to the final possession, including Iowa's last two wins over Northwestern and Rutgers. What are you seeing in the Big Ten this season?
I think you're seeing two things. I think you're seeing the usual parity that we've seen in most years in the Big Ten, and I also think you're seeing a lot of really good teams to begin with. So I think it's sort of the best of both worlds, because you look at, you know, the bottom of the conference, you look at Penn State, we watch them pretty much night in and night out be competitive with everyone they've beat. You know, obviously the two teams they've beat have not come, you know, against slouch opponents, and then you know, every other night they're in it. You see, you know, the Rutgers game with that Iowa finish, that's a game that, you know, Rutgers 9 times out of 10 wins that. You know, so you're just seeing night in and night out, you're seeing close games, you're seeing good teams taking good teams to the wire, you're seeing very few blowouts. They're happening here or there, but I think ultimately, you know, it's one of those years where you feel fortunate to be covering, you know, the Big Ten or a team in the Big Ten, because you know every night you're going to get at least a competitive game. Not all of them are beautiful, but certainly all of them have been competitive.
Ben, someone said to me that they feel the biggest difference to them between the ACC and the Big Ten is actually the bottom. That the bottom is better than the ACC. You have nights off. Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, it's a night off for you. Do you feel the same way with the assessment that he said to me?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think of, I mean, in fairness, when you think of any conference, you always think of the teams at the top, so you're going
right.
to be, you know, drawn to the Dukes and the North Carolinas, and obviously, you know, when you have a guy like Zion Williamson in your conference, and that kind of gives you a national spotlight. But I think there's no doubt that, you know, if you're really watching these conferences, especially the Big Ten, and especially, you know, we have a pretty good vantage point from the bottom of the standings of watching Penn State regularly. It's just like we said, you know, these games they're competitive. And really what makes a conference good is, you know, when it comes to the tournament, certainly it's the teams at the top. It's how far can you go. It's a little bit like bowl season that way. But I think when it comes to, you know, what makes a conference good in the regular season and to a certain extent overall, the depth that you have. And I think, you know, it's sort of the argument that's worked against the Big Ten, you know, maybe in football a little bit, that you have a very good top. You've got a very good Big Ten East. You go over to the West, and certainly, you know, last year and the year before, it was a much different story. But I think traditionally, you know, the bottom of the Big Ten has not necessarily been able to compete in football the same way that it has in basketball. The sports are very different. The infrastructure is very different. So it's not entirely a fair comparison. But I would say, I think top to bottom, the Big Ten is certainly much more competitive because, like you said, there's not very many nights off, and those certainly happen in the ACC.
All right, Penn State, what were your thoughts in watching Saturday's game at Purdue, which has always been a very tough place to play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can fault the, you know, equal parts defense from the slow start that Purdue had. I think, you know, if you're Penn State, though, you kind of look at this as the game is sort of the other side of that coin, which is, you know, they – this is not a team that does well when it gets into foul trouble. Not very many teams do, but I think if you start racking up those fouls, it makes things difficult. When you're not necessarily hitting shots from outside, it makes things difficult. And I think if you told them that you were going to hold Purdue to 10 points for essentially the first 10 minutes of that game, and you were only going to have 17, part of you goes, well, that's good because you're leading by 7. The other part goes, man, you know that Purdue is going to punch back at some point, right, especially at home they did. But, you know, to the credit, to Penn State's credit, you know, they get it down to 5. And, you know, I think they credited Bolton with the turnover. It was probably a group effort between him and Mike on that inbounds, and it right. all sort of unraveled from there. But they're right there in that despite everything. And I think, you know, it goes to show that, you know, they came and they knew what they wanted to do. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a reason why Purdue hasn't lost at home all year.
They've only lost once in 2 years. They're 29-1 now, their last 30 games at home. When you look at Nebraska coming in, when they played Penn State, their starters did not exit 1 second in the second half. They played 187 to 200 minutes. Now, since then, they've lost a starter because Copeland's now out for the year, unfortunately for him, with a torn ACL, so Tanner Borchardt has to step in. Are you surprised with what you've seen from Nebraska this year, considering the veteran cast they had coming back?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are a lot of parallels, I would say, between Nebraska and Penn State in terms of, you know, I think Tim Miles his attitude's maybe a little different than Pat's, but I think they're both sort of, you know, energy guys that are sort of all about, you know, the trying hard and the effort and everything. They had a lot of guys coming back that knew what they were doing, so you sort of assumed that they would be maybe not in the thick of things, but certainly doing better than they have. And now they're sort of in a similar situation as Penn State has been. Although to Penn State's credit, they're probably a deeper team. They're certainly healthier. And Nebraska has struggled here a little bit in the middle of the year. Well, I guess we're not even really in the middle of the year anymore. But, you know, it is not what I expected. It's not what you expect from Tim Miles. You know, certainly they had that really good year a few years ago, and it has not necessarily repeated that success. I would have expected more from this team. But I don't think that you can take any team that's got Tim Miles on the sideline working those guys lightly. But at the same time, you know, they're down some guys. They've not been playing great, and Penn State's played them much better at home than they have in Lincoln.
What does Penn State need to do to get more out of a Mike Watkins or a John Harrah? Because the center spot has not produced a lot of points the last couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got to get Mike into his looks. You know, I think there are a few offensive sets that he does really well in. I think if he can get into the post in positions where he's comfortable, he's got some of those hook looks and turnaround moves. You know, he's I wouldn't call it a mid-range game, but certainly that kind of 6 to 8 foot range, he's shot it okay. And I think we saw, you know, John Harrah is a guy that's super physical. I think what he made him so good in the NIT run was that he was able to get right under the hoop. He was able to muscle up through guys. And I think, you know, to his credit, people have taken to the baskets and the looks haven't been as easy because he's, you know, a guy that went out and produced when they needed him to. But I think it's all about positioning. It's all about getting into your spots because, you know, for both of those guys, really, you know, you get them 3 or 4 feet outside of their comfort zone, that's that much more work they're going to have to do to get inside. And I think they're both, Mike in particular, is especially good when they get their back to the basket and don't have to do much work to turn around and put it in.
I think anytime you see a freshman early in the season, I think all of us have a tendency to wonder, gee, what will they look like at the end of the year? What do the freshmen look like to you now as they hit mid-February?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're not very far from, Ron missing that pretty much wide-open layup at the end of the game the other night, but I think he has looked extremely confident, certainly more confident sense of, you know, he feels like he belongs out there. I think he's handled the ball pretty well. He's shooting it better. And I think, you know, Miles Dredd, to his credit, I think it says how good he can be and how good he is that, you know, he sort of hit his freshman wall and it lasted about, you know, a week and a half. He kind of came out the other side. And there are a lot of guys, you know, that wouldn't be able to do that. But, you know, you look at the confidence he played against Michigan, and I think the confidence that he still has, I think that's a testament to him and really where he can go because I think, you know, between his shooting, his physicality, and both of their ability to handle the ball, you know, you're looking at two really athletic, quick guards that can do a lot of different things, and certainly, you know, to me, when I watch them, yes, they're still freshmen, but we're certainly at this part of the year where you go, these guys are sophomores for all intents and purposes because they've played this much basketball, and to their, they started out their careers here at Penn State, probably farther down the road than a lot of freshmen before them.
Josh Reeves will enter the game 10 points shy of 1,000 in his career. What have you seen from him defensively, but what have also defensively this season?
Yeah, I mean, to his credit, you think about a guy who has played a lot of basketball in one particular way for most of his career, and then you go into your senior season, and everybody tells you now you've got to shoot threes, now you've got to be more offensively inclined, and Josh has always been that sort of fast break, scrappy play kind of scorer, and now, you know, he has been a decently effective three-point shooter when he gets his looks and he's in rhythm. I think defensively you know what you're going to get out of him. Offensively, he's come around. And I think the past few games you've seen him kind of find his comfort zone again. I think when they played that press, against Michigan, that kind of put him in a situation where he could use his athleticism and speed and arms to his advantage because we've seen when Josh Reeves gets into foul trouble, he's not nearly as effective. And certainly you can say that about everybody. But I think, you know, the best Josh Reeves is a guy that's 12 minutes into the game. He's got one foul. He's already got two steals. And he's got points. Because, you know, Josh Reeves will never be the best scorer that Penn State basketball has ever had, but he might be among the best utility players, if you will, of guys that are going to give you – he could give you 10 of anything any given night. And I think, you know, for him to be able to develop his offensive game where he is a consistent enough threat that teams have to take him seriously is a testament to, you know, sort of his work ethic and willingness to change his game after, you know, essentially an entire career of doing one thing.
Jamari Wheeler, what do you like And is it still the shooting?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that, you know, if Jamari can find, you know, his shot in the offensive aspects of those games, that he can be a great player. I think he has got the speed and the quickness and the handles. He reminds me a lot of this sort of mix between Josh and Tim Frazier. Tim Frazier is probably a better passer, but, you know, you could say that about Tim Frazier and a lot of guys that have played at Penn State. But yeah, I mean, he's playing with a lot of confidence. I think he's handling the ball better and better, and he's making smart decisions. And I think certainly from where we sit at the Jordan Center, it's easy to see the court from that kind of bird's eye view and understand what's going on. It's a lot harder when you're down there at court level with the ball in your hand. So I think he's coming a long way, and you figure, you know, this is really his first significant action in a long time, especially with the ball in his hand, because there were just so many guards last year. Tony commanded the ball so much. For him to be able to get to where he is, there's work left for him to do, no doubt. But I think, you know, maybe at the beginning of the year, everyone kind of wonders what the Jamari Wheeler experience is going to be at point guard. And I think he's proven himself more than capable, but certainly he's got work left to do to improve.
Right. No doubt. I mean, in terms of shooting the ball, yes. But, gee, I really like a lot of parts of his game. Defensively, he's as quick as anybody I've seen, Ben. And I also think he's made, for the most part, every once in a while he'll get himself into the trees and look around and go, well, I have nowhere to go. You know, I mean, that happens sometimes. It happens to everybody. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think of, you talked about the defensive intensity. I remember when he would check in last year, and it was just like this instant spark because he's up in this guy's grill.
Yeah.
It's like you just wound up the Energizer button and told him he had 30 seconds to go make something happen. And it's, he's a lot of fun to watch in those moments.
But what have you liked about his floor game? Because, you know, like I said, every once in a while he'll go in and he'll look around. There are three big people and go, it doesn't feel good. But for the most part, he's not doing that anymore. What have you liked about his floor game?
Yeah, I mean, I think he just sees it better and knows where he ought to be and where he shouldn't be. You're absolutely right that there are these moments where you look and Jamari has found himself among a bunch of people that he is otherwise not equipped to take on. But I think he's done a good job of you know, even when he does drive underneath, I think he's done a good job of getting himself out of there at times. And I think sometimes being a good point guard is about just avoiding the areas that you shouldn't be altogether. And I think because of that, it makes him a better player. I think this Penn State team in general has done a good job passing it around the arc. They're, you know, pretty open to finding that open guy, and I think Jamari has done a good job of that. It's sort of an interesting combination, I think, because we've seen Lamar recently at least, you know, take the ball up a little bit in that sort of guard position. Obviously, no one's going to accuse Lamar Stevens of being a point guard, but I think, you know, it's an interesting dynamic when Jamari can run the floor and also at the same time do it, not necessarily with the ball in his hands, but I think, you know, there's no doubt he's getting better and better of avoiding the bad spots altogether. Because this team, you know, can't really, and no team can't really afford the unforced turnovers that come from the mental errors of just sort of being where you shouldn't be.
How do you view the second matchup with Nebraska?
I mean, generally, Penn State's played Nebraska better at home. You know, that could probably be said about a lot of teams that go there and end up in foul trouble for whatever reason. You know, like this, you said, they're sort of limited. I think Penn State's playing with a lot more confidence. I think really, you know, they've been a confident team all year, but I think after, you know, that loss to Purdue a couple weeks ago, I think you saw them kind of realize that they really could hang with, you know, some of these teams. In Nebraska, you know, by no means is, you know, the Michigans or Michigan States or Purdue's of the world. So, you know, I like Penn State's chances. I think they're not due for another win because they've been playing pretty well, and you could argue they've been due for one for a while, but I like their chances. They're deeper, they're playing with more confidence, and they're not Lincoln, and I think that's a huge factor for them.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, Penn State basketball and football writer for statecollege.com, and they were talking a little bit at the end of that interview of tomorrow night's matchup with the Nittany Lions and Nebraska in the Jordan Center. We'll have that for you on WKOK and also streaming at WKOK.com, pregame at 6:30 and the tip at 7 from the BJC with Steve and Dick Girardi. And we'll dig a little deeper into that Penn State-Nebraska matchup with Robin Washit, who is a Nebraska basketball writer for HuskerOnline.com and Rivals.com. So Robin will check in the next half hour, and also will go to Philadelphia with a Philly sports report from Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. When, oh, when will the Philly sign Bryce Harper? The wait continues. And we'll continue with more of the Steve Jones Show next on WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Sunbury Motors Ford is getting the year off to a fast start. In January, SMC was right on pace to hit their goal of selling 1,000 new Fords in 2019. In February, Sunbury Motors will shift into high gear during its President's Day sales event. Choose from four city blocks of new Fords with savings up to $16,000. Pick from over 60 new Ford F-150 4x4s priced as low as $29,934. Deals on new 2019 Ford Fiestas are in overdrive. SMC has them starting at just $12,820.
And it gets 35 mpgs.
Select from over 45 Ford Escapes, and they're slashed to an amazing price of $17,820. SMC has an incredible deal on a 2018 Ford Fusion, discounted down to $17,770. Sunbury Motors' goal of 1,000 new Fords in 2019 will give all of Central PA the largest discounts on new Fords in recent history. In February, SMC wants to put you into victory lane and become a member of their 1,000 Club of 2019. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And always a big thanks to our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, we'll go back to our guest line. Had a chance to speak with Nebraska basketball writer Robin Washit. He is from HuskerOnline.com, as we're just a little over 24 hours away from Penn State and Nebraska. That's Tuesday night in the BJC.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to sports franchises, I have little concern about their budget or anything to do with how much money they have. It's what can you do for me and my favorite team.
You got that right, pal. You got that right. When Penn State played there on January 10th, it was the last time that Nebraska scored 70 points in a game. I know Copeland got hurt eventually, but what has bogged them down offensively?
Yeah, the Copeland thing is a big part of it, but their issues started even before he was lost for the season to that knee injury. And a lot of it is, I think, the grind of Big Ten play, as we all know, and you get those familiar opponents that have as good of a scout on you as anyone. So they've been able to figure out guys like James Palmer, and then along with that, Glenn Watson went through about a 5-game skid where 15 total points over 4 or 5 games, and was really in a bad slump. And so those two things I think played as much of a role as anything, and then just the fact they weren't making shots. Basketball can be a pretty simple game sometimes, and Nebraska just could not put the ball through the hole. I mean, there was a game where they shot 21% from the field, and we're struggling to even get over 30% for a couple games in a row. And so that has steadily gotten somewhat better to where they've been over 30% the last few times. But they just won a game scoring 59 points. That still doesn't do much to resolve kind of the overlying issue of the problems this team is facing offensively. And so they don't have a lot of options. If James Palmer's not scoring, if Glenn Watson's not scoring, and if Isaiah Roby's not scoring, they don't have a lot of options, especially with Copeland out of the mix. And so there's just so much weight on those guys' shoulders that if they do have a bad night, and heaven forbid two of them have a bad night, Nebraska's offense takes significant steps backwards. And so I think it's kind of a combination of those factors that have really made life very difficult on the offensive end for Nebraska of late.
Richard Pitino is not exactly enamored with the final call in the Minnesota game that led to the game-winning free throw. Take us through that play, but maybe more importantly for Nebraska, what did it do for them emotionally because they did win the game?
Yeah, so that series, the final minute, Isaiah Roby was able to draw a charge on Jordan Murphy that I know some people kind of question, but to me, I thought that was the right call. I guess you're going to make a call on that play. It was a charge, and so that got him the ball back, Thomas Allen drove and got his shot blocked into the hands of, I think it was Amir Coffey or somebody, a Minnesota player, but his foot was out of bounds, and so they had the ball back with like 3 seconds left. And rather than, you know, go up just for a pure shot, Palmer played the foul. And so he got Amir Coffey to jump in the air. And, you know, that's kind of where you get the discrepancy of was Coffey straight up or was he, you know, in the air and, you know, leaning over Palmer. But Palmer initiated the contact, took a gamble, got the whistle, went to the free throw line, made two free throws to win it. And so, you know, Nebraska probably got fortunate that they did get that whistle, but I do know that they've been on the wrong end of those types of plays far more than they've been on the right end, so mm-hmm. maybe a little law of averages playing out there. But just in the grand scheme of things, getting that win, snapping a 7-game losing streak, was such a monkey off this team's back. I mean, you could just see it. I think the game before, Isaiah was just talking about how guys weren't having fun anymore. You know, they weren't enjoying basketball because everything was, you know, such hard work. I mean, even to, you know, muster offense and let alone win a basketball game. And so just getting that relief to just kind of put that behind them was so desperately needed. And now, you know, they've been able to turn that to back-to-back wins mm-hmm. to where, you know, all of a sudden what looked like a completely lost season, there's still a sliver of hope remaining that they could work their way back into the NCAA tournament if they're able to take care of business to some degree over these next 5 games. And so, I mean, if nothing else, that win, you know, took some of that negativity away from the program and also provided some hope again that, you know, this season that started out such promise, you know, could still be salvaged, albeit still an uphill battle to climb yet.
When Nebraska played Penn State January 10th, the starters played every second of the second half. There wasn't a single second with a bench player in there. Of the 200 minutes available in the game, Nebraska starters played 187 of 200. Now, I made the comment afterwards, I said, in 3 weeks, this team's going to be blown out. How? I mean, in terms of, like, I'm talking about blown out, like, physically. I don't mean blown out of games, but blown out physically. Did they start to look like a tired basketball team after 3 weeks of that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that had as much to do with that losing skid and the kind of decreased performance every night just because guys were worn down, not only emotionally, but physically as well. And what's interesting is they've tried to make more of an effort to get the bench involved, but the problem is they just don't have anybody. I mean, their bench is really, really, really limited, especially when it comes to scores. You know, they have a kid by the name of Nana Kenton, who is from Illinois, was a former Rivals 150 recruit, but he was supposed to be the only guy that could really provide some offense, and he's been struggling mightily with his shooting. And so really, their bench consists of, you know, either some post players that should probably be redshirting right now, or defensive oriented wings, and just really don't have a lot to work with. And so that kind of goes along with the pressure on those starters to carry, you know, almost all of the load offensively. And so they've been trying to get more of those guys involved, but, you know, last time out, they did it again. They played all the starters. They did not sub mm-hmm. in the second half. And so I think when it comes down to crunch time, Tim Miles has made the decision that, he's going to hitch his wagon to those top group and let them carry the way. And, you know, basketball's different now, I guess, and there's so much stoppages, you know, with all the media timeouts and all the breaks. It's not like they're just running for 20 minutes straight, but still, I mean, it's the Big Ten and it's a physical league, and the wear and tear is certainly taking a toll on these guys to where they're still holding up okay, but if they had any more help off the bench, especially on the offensive end, that would do wonders, I think, for getting James Palmer more consistent and Glenn Watson in the same vein. And it's just been a problem that we knew was going to be an issue going into the year, and it's played out exactly like we thought so far through three quarters of the season.
Tanner Borkhardt, though, is a guy that is in the starting lineup. He's always been a hard-working, energy guy. He's not going to be Copeland, but what has he added?
Rebounding, more than anything. You know, this was a team that really struggled, especially with their defensive rebounding. I mean, they were giving up, you know, upwards to 14 offensive rebounds a game during a stretch there. And, you know, they're just not good enough to give opponents that many second-chance opportunities. And so with his increased role, Nebraska's rebounding has gotten a lot better. And it's not only just him grabbing rebounds, but his ability to box out and take away opposing teams' top rebounding options to where, you know, they can't get to the ball either and allow somebody else to go grab the ball. That is by far his biggest contribution. And, you know, it's funny because I think two games ago he played 31 minutes and the only stat he registered was one assist.
Yeah.
But he's played 31 minutes. And so, I mean, he's still doing things that don't necessarily show up on the box score. And I think you said it. It's just his hustle and toughness. You know, he's probably the biggest kid on the roster. And, you know, that's something that this team desperately needs. And so even if he isn't providing much, you know, with his scoring or at times even his rebounding numbers, he still gives them an element that they desperately need with his size and strength inside.
You mentioned Nana Kenton. He hasn't played the last couple of games. What issue has he had?
Yeah, he's been sick. He's been sick, and this is the second time he's missed games due to illness. And so they need to load that kid up with some vitamin C or get him a flu shot or something. Because, he's been warming up. He's been practicing. I guess, you know, part of it is Nebraska just didn't sub a lot last game, and so that kind of limited his opportunity. But the other part is, you know, they need him to get back to full strength because if he's not playing with energy on offense, it's hard to play him. That with a lot of the guys on that bench that, you know, they're not going to put up numbers. And so if they're not ready to, you know, make those kind of winning hustle plays every minute they're on the court, it's hard for this coaching staff, I think, to trust them to put him out there, especially in crucial situations.
All right, how do you view Penn State's second time around?
Well, I mean, they're obviously gone through their share of struggles since these teams last met. But what's interesting is Nebraska has been really bad in state college. Since joining the Big Ten, I think, what are they? They've lost, what, six of their seven games there? Five of their six, and then they've lost two in neutral site games. So for whatever reason, Nebraska has a lot of trouble with Penn State away from Lincoln, Nebraska. And I don't know why that is. But I think that that's probably going to be something that they're going to have to deal with again tomorrow night is finding a way to play with the same type of energy that they do at home. And, you know, obviously there are no situations to take anyone for granted, but don't even look at where teams are in the standings right now because Penn State, obviously, they gave them all they could handle in Lincoln, and that was back when they had Isaac Copeland. And so now, you know, you're a team that is scrambling to come up with whatever offense you can get. You have to be at your best, especially in a game like this that is so critical to their path to getting back in that NCAA tournament conversation. Because after Penn State, they have Purdue at home, and then they go to Michigan State, and then they close out at Iowa. And so this is kind of that one remaining game where Nebraska might have a chance to be favored. I haven't seen the line yet, but if they're not favored, I would imagine the spread's going to be pretty close.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity that Nebraska absolutely has to take advantage of if they're going to keep that hope that we were talking about earlier alive to salvage this season. And so, you don't look at anything really, I don't think, about that first matchup because Nebraska's such a different team now. And certainly you don't look at what Penn State has done leading up to this point because all that matters is what two teams show up tomorrow night.
Exactly right. Robin, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time, the analysis very much. And by the way, you talk about the energy in that arena. The energy in Pinnacle Bank is unbelievable. Those are great fans there. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. They've been turning out 10,000 fans for a team that lost seven in a row. So
not
you'll
bad.
Know because there's nothing better to do, but hey, you know.
Well,
there's
something to be said for that, too. Okay. Robin, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yep. No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
And we talk Philly sports now with Matt Leon from KYW.
Good to be with you.
Anybody waiting on phone calls from Bryce Harper and Manny Machado?
Eventually they have to sign somewhere, don't they? And I think that's kind of where we are now. I think everybody's just ready for there to be a decision one way or another so everyone can kind of move on.
How, just in general principle, if you're going to commit to somebody like this, and they're great, I mean, Machado's a terrific player. Harper has moments where he is also a terrific player. But is there, do you sense in talking to some people that they don't feel like committing 15 to 18% of their budget on one guy?
I haven't gotten that. I think they're ready to spend money. I think it's just a
I think the Phillies
of,
are, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm talking in general, though.
Oh, I think in general, for a lot of people, it would be, it's a big pill to swallow because, you know, you're really hitching your wagon there. And it might not even be the amount of money as the amount of years that you would be connected to that, you know, that no matter how young a player is, somewhere on that contract, skills will start to decline.
Yeah.
And then it really gets tough. But I think for a team specifically looking at the Phillies, who I think have had an outstanding offseason.
Yes, I agree.
Regardless of how this plays out, you know, adding one of these guys would turn them into from a contender, I think, to maybe even a favorite.
Right.
In the National League, or one of the favorites in the National League. I think the problem that's specific to the Phillies is their offseason was framed from day one through the prism of they are going to get one of these guys. And regardless of how good they've done with all the other moves, if they don't land one of these guys, there's a good portion of the fan base that's going to look at the offseason as a failure. And, you know, that's they kind of painted this themselves. You've kind of seen, I think, through the entire offseason, as it has played on, members of the front office, when they've spoken at the beginning of spring training, kind of walking back and talking about how, you know, well, you know, regardless of if we don't add anybody else, you know, we've had a great offseason, and I agree.
Yes.
But
yeah,
you shouldn't have allowed the thing to be painted in the first place where it was kind of Bryce Harper, Manny Machado were bust.
It's interesting, though, when you break down the numbers of Major League Baseball today, and this, I think, deals with a lot with analytics and breakdowns. The number of players over the age of 33 has actually, and by the way, Machado and Harper obviously don't fit into this category. They're both in their mid-20s. But the veteran player over the age of 33 has declined dramatically, Matt. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think...
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think probably a lot of it is the analytics, and, you know, there's very rarely, you know, a second uptick in somebody's career once they get to that point. You might have a guy here or there who, you know, cheats father time and has a throwback season or whatever. And I think teams are getting to be paying big-time money for that, and I think you've got more guys that get to that point in career and, you know, don't want to sign a one-year deal for, you know, less than $1 million or whatever, and, you know, maybe look to go in some different directions. And I think that's probably got a lot to do with it, where teams are getting much more prudent when it comes to the back end of these deals and long terms, and they know what 30 years old means and stuff like that. And it is probably leading to, you know, 15 years ago could have kept banging around on one-year deals at the major league level for pretty good money. You know, that's getting harder and harder to do.
Yeah, it is, because the numbers are dramatically different now in Major League Baseball about the number of players who are over the age of 33. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. I mean, 26% fewer players over the age of 33 now compared to even a year ago. 26%. I mean, I find it's remarkable.
I find it remarkable, but if you take a second and think about it, it makes sense with the direction that everything has gone. You know, like I said, when just about everybody, if not everybody now, looks at every player, development player acquisition through the eyes of, you know, cold, hard numbers. You know, what is player X going to do at this age? What does the average player do at this age? Where is the significant drop off? Where are we not comfortable paying guaranteed money? Any, you know, stuff like that. So people are much more exact. And as far as when guys start or stop becoming productive players worthy of the big numbers.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, look at Jake Arrieta's contract. He signed with 3 years, and you could tell. Look, you could tell he kind of looked around and said, "Okay, I think this is as well as I can do." But he wasn't thrilled about it.
Yeah. No, and you know, in his, he had an interesting season. You know, you look now; it's come out that he had a meniscus off-season surgery, and it turns out that it was an injury that he says he suffered in June. And if that's the case, you can kind of go and point to, you know, even if you didn't know he got hurt, we could have gone through his starts and kind of circled where, oh, wow, he really dropped off starting on this date, and it kind of falls to where he says he got hurt. So it'll be interesting to see if he bounced back. Yeah, but I think it's even more pronounced for pitchers. I think, you know, teams don't want to be stuck holding the bag for three big money years at the back end of a 6-year deal for a guy whose, you know, arm is going to blow off or, you know, really blow up at the, after the age of 30.
Colin Kaepernick and Reed both settled with the NFL. You feel like it's one of those where you look at it and you don't feel like there are any winners in it. I mean, yeah, the NFL essentially makes it go away. Reed and Kaepernick are going to get a lot of money. Nobody knows how much. Reed has a 3-year deal. Kaepernick has a chance, but after not playing for 25 months, you know, might have another chance to play again. How did you end up viewing how all of this played out? Because, you know, I don't feel like Kaepernick sold out. And at the same time, I think the NFL thought they had a rock-solid case in this, and then I think they found a couple of cracks, and they went, uh-oh, we got a problem here.
Yeah, I think the settlement to me points a lot to, I think the NFL, if it would have gotten to an open discovery phase, I think it would not have been good, and it may have led to bigger, you may have started to see a picture of collusion and stuff if all of a sudden texts and emails became public, you know, and how teams maybe framed certain arguments and stuff like that. So, no, I don't know that there's anybody that I would say is a winner. I think it has probably led to some important discussions to be had, and I was glad to see Eric Reed get signed, and I'm fascinated to see what Colin Kaepernick's, not just career here, but what unfolds for him besides football down the road, because I think he will end up having probably a much bigger impact on society off the field than anything he did on it. But, no, I did... The first thing I thought was that the NFL must have started to realize that the more open and the more people learned about this, the uglier and worse it was going to look for them.
Because I think the sense I was getting from a couple of people I know that at least have some association with the NFL is that they felt actually pretty good about it. And then all of a sudden, like near the end, they're like, well, there's something that they weren't, suddenly they became very uncomfortable about. Because they, for a long time, felt good about it. And then all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh. Kaepernick's going to be interesting because I think anywhere he goes, I think he's going to be embraced right away. I really do. Because everyone loves a comeback story. And I think there are a lot of people who like to see him come back. Now, whether he's still got the skills to make it happen, we'll see.
No, and I agree. And I think, you know, Colin Kaepernick, when this is written, you know, he's on the right side of history. And a lot of times guys that take hits for you know, for stuff like this, when you start looking at the long game, people start looking at them differently. So it'll be interesting. It will really be interesting to see how it plays out.
I do too. How's Penn doing? I've watched a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but only a little bit.
Well, 3-5 in the Ivy League, and right now they are on the outside looking in. You know, top four go to the Ivy League tournament, and they're 2 games out of fourth, and adding to that is they are 0-5 against the 4 teams ahead of them. Yeah. So right now, not only are they 2 games back, but they lose all their tiebreakers. It's going to be an uphill climb. Still 6 games left. You know, you still play everybody at least once. They've still got a lot of basketball in front of them. But, you know, they've gotten some bad bounces. I think some of the freshmen have kind of hit the wall here as this season has wound out here. It'll be interesting. But they do have four of their last six at home. And, you know, all you got to do is get into that four spot. And then anything can happen in the, you know, in about a month in New Haven. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's a real carrot to dangle. Let's all go to New Haven. All right.
Yeah.
Believe me, I've been to New Haven.
It's beautiful this time of year.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Can't be any better. All right. I know firsthand. All right. We'll come back. Thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.